What's up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast with my co-host, Evan Damerl. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Cavs as we look at their roster post-NBA draft, but really pre-free agency. Segment one, we're going to look at possible starting lineup. Segment two, key bench pieces. Segment three, some fringe depth pieces, and then maybe the odd men out in the rotation. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Spotify or Apple Music. Go to see one of their shows this summer across various bars in Northeast Ohio. Thanks for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's For the Sword. My co-host, Evan Damerl, is primarily at Facebook's Write Down. You could find him on Twitter at amnotevan. Evan, are you ready to talk about Cavs lineups? I understand we're doing this in late June, but post-draft, pre-free agency, are you ready to discuss starting lineups, rotations, bench lineups, things of that nature?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought exercise, just post-draft, pre-free agency for Cleveland. There is a lot hinging on what Cleveland can and cannot do. They are a little landlocked financially, obviously, and their roster is pretty set rotation-wise. So unless, barring anything dramatic, I think if they bring back Colin Sexton, they're possibly Ricky Rubio long-term, like down the line, I should say, instead. This is largely going to be the same roster as last year, and it's an interesting thought exercise because there's only really three set positions in the starting five. And then you have to debate the two guard and the small forward spot. And then also how, like, JB goes three, four players deep usually in his rotation. Who are those three or four players that crack minutes in JB's rotation? And just kind of how does he handle it long term? Like, there's a lot of variables. And you wrote a really good story about this for Fear the Sword as well, where, like, it is a thought exercise I've been mulling over the last few days ever since I read it.
Yeah, so two notes on that. Number one, you can read the word version of this of sorts at Fear the Sword. That was obviously me and not Evan and I. Secondly, because this is pre-free agency, we're not including Colin Sexton in this. We just don't. He is technically not, like, on their roster right now until he signs a new contract and everything like that. That's also fair. Like, Ricky Rubio, not going to be included in this. Any, like, hypotheticals, we may, like, shout them out as we go here. I did that in the piece as we're going to say, okay, is where would X player slot in? Sexton kind of being the most notable one. But just so you're keeping that in mind, keep that in the back of your head as you're listening here. So, Evan, let's start with the starting lineup. I think the starting lineup, based as we see the roster now, I think there's, like, pretty good reason to believe the three big thing as we understood it last, like the Markkanen and Mobley Allen thing with Garland as the one. I think, like, that is the most logical way this could go, right? Like, it just, there isn't a three they've gone out and gotten that really changes the equation as far as how you would approach that. So I think you could get Garland, LeVert, Markkanen, and Mobley Allen. I think Garland, Okoro, Markkanen, and Mobley Allen, something we saw last year, is an option. And then the one that is, we just won't know until we get the training camp and we kind of see how that goes, but, like, Garland, Ochai Agbaji, their first round pick, Markkanen, and Mobley Allen is the other one. If Agbaji can shoot and defend right away, then you could make an argument that that makes some sense. I don't think, again, as of right now, there's enough to make me think maybe they would go two wings or go, like, Garland, one of Okoro and Agbaji, and then LeVert as a three. It doesn't totally strike me something they would. It doesn't feel like a JB move. I would suspect that unless there is something that changes in free agency, maybe Markkanen is the odds-on favorite to be the starting small forward on opening night as we understand the roster right now.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of it, at least how JB operates, is you have to earn it if you want to be a guy who supersedes, let's just say, Lauri Markkanen in the starting lineup right now. And the two guard is a little bit in flux just depending on what happens. Because, like you said, you have options with LeVert, Agbaji, Okoro. like you said, LeVert could play the three. I mean, the Cavs, even though they keep kind of trying to pencil Obagi in as a two, at least Kobe Altman did, they could ask him to play bigger and ask him to play the three right out the gates as well, which would be a tough ask of him. But if he has the defensive capabilities, which I think he does, it just, it's going to be a bit of a learning curve in the trial by process kind of thing. Trial by fire, rather. And you could do that. I think Okoro, coming into year three, like, there's a lot of expectations and onus on him. But if he's still largely a limitation offensively, is he viable as a starter? Or is he going to kind of muddy things up for you offensively because defenses won't play the Cavs honestly and just sag off him and have a guy play free safety or roam the paint or just wall off, so the Cavs kind of just get frustrated? There's a lot of interesting ways to go about this, but Markkanen could be the odd man out because, like I've said a few times now, when it comes to Caris LeVert, he could start at the three just because he possesses the size. I think he has an interesting enough skill set to maybe make it work as just a bigger Colin Sexton, just like a slashing three who could provide you some shooting if you need it. But if he's fully healthy, if he's fully comfortable and fully acclimated, there is a realistic world where you could start him at the three. But at the same time, then you have to talk about the thought exercise of, okay, your bench units are probably going to feature Kevin Love and Lauri Markkanen together, and defensively, that's a disaster. And that's just going to get the Cavs roasted a lot more often than not. And I think, like you said, the Cavs will likely go big heading into next season because, one, that's their identity, and two, they have the cohesive pieces in Jared Allen and Evan Mobley to make it work on the back line of defense. And maybe that's where you make an argument for Isaac Okoro, too, and maybe ignore the offensive limitations he may possess because this is a defensive-first team. And more so focus on the fact that, hey, Darius Garland can kind of get shredded in the pick and roll sometimes too. Maybe having Isaac Okoro to be a little bit of a safety valve next to him on the perimeter would help. And also, if Markkanen starts getting cooked or hunted on the perimeter too, you can let Okoro play a little bit of help defense, so, you know, rough up the opposition a little bit and try and make the opposing team uncomfortable, so you can kind of take those two quasi-weaknesses on defense and kind of smooth it out enough so that you can maybe just tinker with the lineups as you go.
Yeah, Mark, I think Markkanen's spacing is like the reason you're kind of maybe hoping he saves it, because that's just a needed skill on this team. Like, Garland's,
It is.
Well, Garland's going to space. Mobley, like, maybe will space. We don't know if that's going to be a thing. Like, we can
the tricky thing with the Cavs starting five in general is they're two true spacers in their starting five is Garland and Markkanen.
Yeah,
Allen won't shoot, Mobley might shoot, and the two guards just, like, you throw up your hands and because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, Mobley is a maybe. Allen's not going to space. So, like, Okoro, if he can really if he can, like, be an average-ish shooter next year, like, that makes this a little bit of an indecision, because I think bona fide, good point-of-attack defender covers for Garland in that way, making some sense. And Garland, Okoro, Markkanen, and Mobley, Allen last year were plus 10 per 100 possessions, scored 116. Per 100 possessions, that was 5 points better, 4.9, but basically 5 points better than the Cavs' offensive rating average. Gave up 106.5, which was 3.5 points better than the Cavs' overall defensive rating. So, like, that lineup, it was less than 500 possessions, because the Cavs had a lot of lineups last year that were kind of, you know, a little all over the place, just because they had a lot of injuries and a lot of stuff kind of fluctuating throughout the year. But, like, That lineup and that sample was good. And I think there's reason, if you can, Okoro is, like, going to be one of the swing pieces next year. And, like, if he shows up and is shooting well in camp and looks confident,
it's his make or break season for the Cavs, I'd say.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. If he can get to a level where you're comfortable with what he's doing offensively and he is not being, like, socially distanced from in the corner, then, like, you have a guy there that you can make work in the situation and provide you something on defense. And, you know, there's certainly, I think, the argument, if Mobley adds a create, the LeVert argument, I think, stems from, you know, does he provide creation? Does he provide some of these other things you need? I think there's, I just think as of right now, I just can't imagine, Evan, there's, like, a big swerve here unless there's someone they bring in free agency that changes this calculus a little bit. Like, is it, well, no, but, like, is it like TJ Warren? Is it like, is there like a wing like that? Someone like that? Is there someone they pluck out with the MLE? Yeah, that wouldn't do it for me. Like, it's a guy who's like a 3-4 kind of a bigger wing, and it's really like TJ Warren the only guy in the market. But it's like, if you get that kind of guy, does that change your calculus? And what would it take? I guess, like, the question that's unknowable is, like, what would it take for them to change up that front three from last year that was so key to their identity that I think in a lot of ways worked, but also like there is limitations into it, and is maybe something we should earmark as a potential thing that will change over time. But could it change next year? I think that is a big unknown. Evan, anyone we didn't mention, I guess, like as before we're going to break, is there anyone that, you know, we talked about LeVert a little bit, we talked about Markkanen, we talked about Okoro, though, and we should say Garland, Mobley, Allen are locks. Like those guys are going to start. Is there anyone we didn't mention that is on the roster right now that should be in this conversation? I guess maybe Agbaji, like we talked a little bit, but is there anyone else?
We touched a little bit on Agbaji, but I think he could be interesting just because of the way JB Bickerstaff described how they want to utilize him as a shooter, like a spot-up shooter, a shooter that can kind of run off cuts and screens and things like that to kind of get open spots. If he translates quickly to the next level, he could make a pretty early conversation to join the starting lineup because he's a player, ideally, that makes sense next to Darius Garland because he relieves some of that offensive pressure that opposing teams will put on him. And also, he will probably keep defenses honest, unlike Isaac Okoro and maybe Caris LeVert as well. And even though he's technically a restricted free agent, if Colin Sexton comes back, maybe Colin Sexton too. And it's an interesting thought exercise again. But Abaji's a guy I'd maybe like just put a pin on and say, like, okay, maybe the Cavs do get really weird with it and kind of go bigger 2 through 5. And then they play Garland as like the true small in the starting lineup and then just make it work from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think they trended that way a little bit last year anyway, but do they say, okay, we get a version of that, but with better spacing from the two spot, and what does it offer?
Yeah.
I think that's like the
Caris LeVert versus Ochai Agbaji.
So. Yeah, or even like Okoro is like he's a big physical guy, but just isn't providing the spacing for you. All right, after the break, we're going to talk about key bench pieces, which is, I think, headlined by Kevin Love, who was awesome last year, and we're going to talk a little bit about him and where he's going there, but first, going to tell everyone about our friends at Sakara. Feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it. With delicious, plant-based, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body, Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Sakara gives you the tools you need to transform your life with their organic, ready-to-eat meal delivery program and functional wellness essentials. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful, plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's delivered right to your door, ready to eat. They have great products, including their best-selling metabolism super powder to their foundation, which is their daily supplemental packs. They're loaded with great stuff. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/lockdown20. That's sakara.com/lockdown20, or you enter the code lockdown20 at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/lockdown20 to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/lockdown20. All right, let's go to some key bench pieces. I'm Chris Manning. That is Evan Damrell. Sexton, I think we should just note, could slot in here. He could start in the starting lineup. There's a discussion to be had about that if/when he resigns with the team. We'll put a pin in
It's a can of worms, that discussion.
That will be a I'm sure we will get some response to that, and I'm sure that will be a thing that is kindly
Just even the mention of it will be kindly embraced by his BTS-level army.
I mean, I won't go that far, but very rational discussions about Colin Sexton. All right, so Kevin Love headlines this group to me, Evan, which I think is an interesting point to start at just because look at where he was last year. Look at where he's at in his age. Look at how they handled his minutes last year. Like, that is just such an interesting bench piece to rely on as we're looking ahead to next season. And you would hope he can sustain it, but, like, if there's a slight decrease, if there's worse injury luck, like, I don't know if you can, like, 100% like assume that that's going to be as great as it was last year. That's just a hard bet to make, I think.
Yeah, he did have a bit of a he did have a bounce back season last year because all expectations were next to none heading into last season, and you and I were, at least I was, entertaining the idea of buying him out possibly if he just looked as bad as he did and the calf was still bad and then Team USA, Kevin Love, just like that's the last time we saw him and he just looked like a shell of himself. It's fair to wonder if maybe he has found his groove as a bench guy. I mean, obviously he has, but like if this is sustainable heading into next season. I think a lot of credit does go to Ricky Rubio for getting him integrated with the bench mob. I think Ricky should get a lot of credit for Jetty Osman's bounce back at the beginning of the season as well. And it's going to be tricky on what the Cavs do with the backup point situation. I think obviously having guys who have familiarity with Kevin, whether it's Darius, whether it is Colin if they bring him back, whether it is Caris LeVert if they like establish a rapport during training camp and get to know each other a bit better and just have familiarity on the court with one another. So it's an interesting thought exercise. So yeah, but Kevin's going to lead this bench. I don't know if he'll be like the tried and true sixth man. He could be the seventh or eighth man in this rotation, just depending on if Okoro is coming off the bench, if Abaji's coming off the bench. And like those two I just mentioned, it's those two, Love, and then I'd probably have to say the guard they end up signing in free agency, hopefully, like the backup point, is like that ninth guy to round out the rotation. But yeah, Kevin will lead things, and I think it's definitely fair to wonder if he has the same season as he did last year. I have my doubts that he will, but I think he might have something similar, just even with the age and the mileage and everything else. I think the Cavs are managing his minutes properly, and they're finding ways to tinker with his health and well-being just to make sure that he has enough longevity for the season. Because to be fair to Kevin, he only missed time last year because of COVID. He didn't miss it for injuries for the first time in a long time. And, like, that's huge for him, honestly. And
yeah,
if he can just sustain that level of health, and as long as he's available, that's a win for the Cavs. And that's obviously a win for him because he provides shooting. He provides passing. He provides rebounding. Like, he provides so many little things that kind of make the Cavs tick that as long as he's available, that's already a win. And, yeah, he'll headline the bench. I just don't know what numbers you'll get again.
Yeah, I think it's like a big question. We'll see where that looks at. Congratulations also to Kevin Love for getting married. I am wondering if they did a Gatsby-themed wedding, and I'm just like wondering if they understand the message of Great Gatsby, which is about how capitalism is hollow, but I digress. I think LeVert will go here as well if they go a certain route with him. Okoro and Abaji, I think, go here as well. That gets us, Evan, in this conversation to eight or nine guys. You know, like Sexton pushes it. Sexton will push it to nine. Just where I'm getting at that Rubio, like in theory, if he's re-signed or if they sign a veteran guard, would get to 10. This is, Evan, I think the most important thing I can say about this group is, to me, if you're looking to create real depth and you're looking to create a better, deeper roster for next season, this is where you got to improve on. You have to aim to get guys that are at this level, to push him the guys that are good depth pieces down or would have been bench pieces otherwise. And yes, maybe this moves them down the totem pole a little bit, and there's some discomfort there, and you have to figure that out. But I think you create real depth by like hitting a certain level of player and being able to bring them in and incorporate them to your team while keeping some of the depth below you. There are obviously cost constraints with that. It's easier said than done. But I think if you can find the right guy in this spot to really add your depth, create competition on the wing, not guarantee some of these guys minutes, I think that's where you, I think, realistically have to hope you're going to create that. It feels like we, again, have those three starting five spots locked in. Markkanen is on a contract that, unless it's traded, you would think he's going to play. We kind of know what's how Stevens and Wade and Osmond Windler kind of are going to function here. Can you add someone to this group to create some competition? Push Okoro, push LeVert, push Sexton or whatever, and like find a way to create real depth. This is the spot on the roster where that would be the most viable in my mind.
I think Abaji could be one of those pieces that really pushes, at least Okoro and Sexton, just because
I think you need, I think they need one more to really like really create some churn there, I think.
I agree with you. I think if you have one more guy, like Abaji's gonna have to climb his way up the totem pole because Okoro's entering year three, Sexton, if he comes back, will be entering year five, I wanna say. Yes. So Abaji will push those two because those guys will kind of be looking over their shoulders a little bit, especially Okoro in a contract year. And there's a little bit of overlap, at least defensively, between what maybe Abaji provides and what Okoro can provide at times. Like maybe what if Abaji provides you something equivalent to Okoro on defense, but he also provides you shooting, which Okoro clearly lacked last season. But I agree. I think like a reliable wing would be the best way to push them, or maybe like a two guard that's reliable that can push them, because like you could make the argument for Jetty Osman if Jetty Osman could remain consistent. But like funny. Jetty's fascinating because, like I said, credit to Ricky Rubio for kind of rebounding Kevin Love's career, and then Jetty Osman just looking so consistent to start the season. But to circle back to what you said before, we're in agreement, so it's Love, Abaji, Okoro, or Okoro / LeVert / Sexton, and then you just sprinkle those two, one of those other guys in as well, and then one of them starts, obviously. Then probably Ricky Rubio or whoever you bring in as like your free agent guard, then you just figure out the minutes as you go. That's going to be Cleveland's rotation, like bench rotation next season. And like you said, like the Wades and the Stevens and the not Windlers and not Osmonds, but like maybe there's another guy. Let's say like Brandon Goodwin sticks with this team and he's on another two-way deal. Like he's a guy who maybe after playing some more time with the Cavs and having camp and everything else and just familiarity with this team, he's just one of those pieces where he's ready and he's present. So if you have to turn to him in like a pinch situation, let's say like Darius Garland can't go and Ricky Rubio still isn't available, like they're going to try and cobble something together and like supplant some point guard minutes, but like they can ask Brandon Goodwin to play 10-15 minutes a night and it won't blow up in their faces. So I think the Cavs kind of have to focus on that too, just to round up like the back end of the depth chart of their depth chart, because let's be frank, they have guys who have some injury issues, especially when you look at LeVert, you look at Love, you look, I guess it's Sexton because he tore a meniscus, but like Garland could be in and out of the lineup too. Like there's guys who could be in and out of the lineup, and you need guys to be ready as well. So it's a lot of things. So I agree, yes, they needed maybe bring in another wing to push those guys, but also maintaining that stance of having dudes who are just probably know they're not going to play on a night-to-night basis, but if their number's called, they don't get overwhelmed by the moment.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things. You have to balance that as a coach. You have to balance that as an organization and like find guys that are comfortable with that. And also like creating that, I think creating that competition within the actual rotation like isn't a bad thing. So all right, after the break, we're going to talk about those fringe rotation guys slash odd men out and what could happen there. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends.
Odd men out.
Yeah. Our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, league reviews, news, and more, including this year's Major League Baseball season and a whole lot more. BetOnline is your continued source for your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. For instance, if you're into MMA, Israel Adesanya is a minus 400 favorite over Jared Cannonier at UFC 276 next weekend, while Alex Volkanovski is a minus 190 favorite over Max Holloway in their trilogy fight onto that same card. There's a ton of great NBA futures too, including next possible teams for, well, Kyrie Irving, we'll see if that's all on there, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and a whole lot more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. That's BetOnline. That's where the game starts. All right, last segment, Locked On Cavs, Chris Manning, Evan Damrell. So fringe rotation guys, Evan, I'll say bluntly, I trust Dean Wade, and I think JB Bickerstaff does as well. Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens above Jetty Osmond and Dylan Windler at this moment in time.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think there is a certain type of player JB Bickerstaff vibes with, and Lamar Stevens is definitely one of those dudes. I think Lamar being the culture guy too certainly helps his case as well, and he's kind of in the ear of like every player. Like he's the connective tissue between the coaching staff and the roster, but he is close with the superstars at Darius Garland. He's also close with the guys at the back end of the rotation, like Dean Wade and Brandon Goodwin and guys like that. So he's useful in that regard, and I agree. Like he had to step up at times due to injuries and COVID last season. He carved out minutes in the rotation and earned it because he played well in those minutes that they asked of him. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, is the Cavs need to kind of find guys who are, one, reliable in terms of just health. That's Dylan Windler is just kind of crossed out there. And just consistent and not too overwhelmed by the moment. And that's where you cross Jetty Osmond out. And we'll see what D-Wade looks like post-injury, obviously, and post-recovery. But Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade feel like safe bets to crack those two over the rotation. And it also depends. Like, Windler and Osmond could get traded this offseason if they're included in fodder for something else. But, yeah, I just, in terms of what JB Bickerstaff is looking for in players, like, Lamar busts his butt on defense. He plays hard on every possession. Dean Wade is a stretchy four who's being asked to play the three and also could play small ball five if you want him to. Osmond's just inconsistent, and Windler's just, unfortunately, people are still in love with the idea of Dylan Windler. He just can't stay healthy at this point. And I don't know, I think Jason Lloyd noted this the other day, but like Ochai Agbaji, I feel like, is what the Cavs hoped Dylan Windler could have been.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of ready to move on from it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dylan Windler, they picked up his option. He's going to make $4 million this year. Jetty Osmond, as we've noted a bunch, is functioning the last year of his deal because the last year's not guaranteed. You put those two salaries together, you're like getting to, I think about nearly $10 million. Like, does that Does that plus something like get you a return on something? Like if the for instance, if the Wizards wanted to shed salary, you combine those two guys, you trade it, you get KCP back from the Wizards, throw a second round pick or something.
Slam dunk.
Like that to me is the kind of thing that can make some sense. If you're not gonna, if like the MLE or part of it's gonna go to Rubio, and then like you want to make a trade and kind of still kind of make some moves on the roster, that's the kind of thing you're looking at. I'm not saying KCP is like the guy, but if there's someone in that salary range that you could go out and get, that would make a ton of sense to me. Look, he's Windler, I empathize with him a lot. He's played 81 games in 3 years. He played in the G League last year just to really get some reps. It's just been really tricky for him, and Jetty just hasn't ever really been consistent. Evan, I looked up the numbers again. The stuff with Rubio and without Rubio just remain insane. So last year the Cavs were minus nine points per 100 possessions with him on the floor and no Rubio. They were plus 9.6 when Osmond played with Rubio.
It is wild having a cerebral point guard like that, kind of just picking apart bench rotations, made Jetty Osmond's life so much easier. But also maybe Jetty just hit like a really high peak and then just came crashing back down. He was coming back down a little bit before Rubio got hurt, but he kind of hit rock bottom at times when Rubio was out for the season.
Yeah, I think there was like a stabilizing force there. And then I just look at Wade, I look at Stevens. Those are dudes who pretty consistently showed up. They're going to go at it. Lamar Stevens is just currently
like they're not going to score 20 points a night. They'll get you like 4 points, 5 rebounds, and like an assist or something.
Yeah, but and like they're going to compete
for 30 minutes.
Yeah, they're going to compete. They're going to fill in. They're going to be like do kind of the things I think Bickerstaff is looking for in his guys and fit that kind of ethos I think they're kind of going for. So like I think they're in the on-off numbers and things like that would suggest that this bears out as well. So like I have them, if we're penciling in the rotation today, it's them above those guys. All right, so let's go through the list here. Let's just say the starting five. Let's just assume right now it's going to be, let's go Garland, Markkanen, Mobley, Allen, right? Like that, those are four. Who do you want to pencil in as, do you want to just throw in Agbaji and be spicy? Do you want to put in Okoro? Who do you want to put in there?
I'm going to say Caris LeVert because it's been reported quite a bit that was the Cavs' hope for this season in terms of a starting five. Obviously, they got a pick and it changed things, but we'll just say LeVert for now.
All right, so then you have Okoro and Agbaji off the bench. You have Kevin Love off the bench. And then that gets you to eight. So then let's say they get Ricky Rubio on as part of the MLE. That takes you to nine. Sexton, whether he ends up starting or 10, that's 10 guys right there. And then you have your depth pieces at 12. You still have three roster spots, obviously. And I think there still would be room to try to make an upgrade at the wing and create some real competition there. But that's where you're kind of at. And again, they only really have the MLE. They have trades and they have minimum signings. Like those are the paths to improvement here, and like how they approach that, I think will be interesting. And like what's kind of out there now is that like the money to spend is maybe to go get another backup point guard and play it that way. And if it's Rubio, then it's okay. We have LeVert and maybe Sexton if he ends up coming back, and we kind of give him a buffer until he gets back, and then we throw him in the rotation and kind of roll with some of the stuff that worked last year. Like it doesn't seem like anything more seismic than that is really in the cards here, barring something changing. And look, it's June, we're recording this on June 27th. We're in a weird time of year. John Wall is a free agent. Kyrie Irving is having a whole news cycle to himself. There's just like a lot that happens this time of year.
I mean, man, I wish I could have the Kyrie quote in front of me, but what a gem. What a... Just Kevin Durant's going to have to be traded because of that quote, but or the tweet he gifted at... the gif he tweeted afterwards. But the Cavs were largely a team. This is just a kind of a conversation that's needs to be had, but I don't think we need to add too much thought to it. But they're largely a team that's set rotation wise and depth wise right now, just because of the size of some of their contracts on their roster. And obviously like there's the untouchables in Allen, Garland, and Mobley. And then you have to figure out the rest of it as well. And like that's kind of Cleveland's problem, not mine. And I'll be giving my commentary and observations when they figure it out. But they don't have a lot of options. But they also don't... They obviously need to add a lot, but they don't have a lot of avenues to do that. They don't necessarily also have the roster rotation space to do it. Unless JB just completely shatters his preconceived mold and goes like 10-11 deep, it's going to be 8 or 9 guys, and it's going to be a lot of dudes fighting for those.
Yeah, which
starting 2-3 spots, and then the 3-4 spots in the bench rotation.
Look, and again, I think that is good. I think, like, if you can't, if you're not in a position, like, the Cavs really
healthy,
weren't.
Healthy competition is a great thing. It keeps your team sharp and focused, and also kind of keeps their eye on the prize.
Look, and if you're in a spot where, like, Cleveland, where you couldn't go out, or you didn't go out and make a big trade, you didn't have a high draft pick of someone that, in that regard, like, Abadji was obviously a lottery pick, but he wasn't, like, a top five pick. I think, like, finding guy, like, having some competition in those spots is a good thing. You want to see who's going to stand out, who's going to pop. And look, maybe some of this is, maybe some of the injury could dictate some of this. Other trades could dictate some of this. Like, there are question, you know, are going to be interesting questions about this. If we're doing this, like, John Wall is going to the Clippers. So, like, it's very fun times out here. It's very wild stuff as we're navigating really a lot of this. He makes a ton of sense for those Clippers. All right. Evan, any final thoughts on this? Any last things you want to say on pre-free agency rotation? I think what we will do is once we get through free agency, we'll do and we see what the roster full kind of looks like, we'll do another assessment of this, and we'll do one before the season. But for now, what do you think about where we're at?
I think the Cavs need to get a little creative, maybe get a little messy. Like there's whispers about Nance wanting out of Cleveland and being traded to a contender, and thankfully he ended up with a pretty good team in the Pelicans in the end, but I wonder if Kobe Altman has another move out of left field up his sleeve to kind of address some of the more immediate concerns of this roster, because they are pretty locked. And historically speaking, they're an aggressive team in terms of just making transactions under Altman's tenure. So that's just kind of what I'm going to keep an eye on next. Like, I think obviously the Sexton question is going to be a big one. Do they sign Darius Garland to a max extension this offseason that kicks in next season? They likely will, but we'll see if that happens or not. And then we'll just kind of see where it goes from here. Like, there's a lot of avenues and paths the Cavs could take, and we just have to kind of watch and see what happens. And they're forever is dramatic. They're always going to be a bit more of the one of the interesting teams, not just because I cover them, but there's a lot of different ways this offseason could go for them to see them kind of level up and become more of like a legitimate playoff threat.
Yeah, I'm just now going to spend a lot of time looking at the salaries that they could do Osman plus Windler trades for and like what that could get you.
You got to find a team that wants to shed salary and get below the tax is the other thing. Because not a lot of teams are just like, ooh, you know what really gets me going? Jetty Osman and Dylan Windler in like a second-round pick.
Yeah, it seems like Jay Crowder, that's not going to happen. Royce O'Neal, like that's not really
Royce O'Neal would be fun on this Cavs team. He's a very much a J.B. Bickerstaff type player. And if the Jazz want to have a fire sale at some point, that might be a player I call up Danny Age about.
Yeah, Monty Morris is like kind of in that range as well. There's like some other guys, but like it's, you know, I'm Terrence Ross on the last year of his contract. Like there's some stuff you could do, but will any of this happen? Who the heck knows? KCP's at $14 million, so I'm not quite sure that would work. But all right, that's gonna be it. This has been Locked On Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow, doing an episode on on the Colin Sexton situation. There's a lot to go on there, and we talked to someone from Lockdown Knicks about that and if they could be interested. We also tried to poll other Lockdown hosts, and guess what? Not a lot of bites at that apple for whatever reason. We'll talk about why that might be on tomorrow's show for a great second listen.
It's going to create healthy discourse and discussion that episode.
Guess what? That's fine. We're here just to do a job and be rational and blah, blah, blah. For your second listen today, go get checked up on the latest news and rumors in just 30 minutes or less with Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA is your daily NBA update. In just 30 minutes, check it out. Everyone be well. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Peace out.